We have a couple of announcements this morning. There'll be no RE or nursery service today, but families are welcome to use the nursery if it's needed. Also, Reverend Amy's sabbatical starts tonight at the stroke of midnight, ringing in the new year. So we will miss you, Amy, but, you know that we'll be in the good hands of our community here. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events. Everyone is welcome to attend. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of whom they love or what pronouns they use. Come and explore what community can mean for you. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics you may have with you today. Thank you. We kindle a flame we trust will lead us forward as we travel in unknown lands, where the question, shall I ever get there, resounds a clear, pure note in every silence. Let that pure note ring out today as we rejoice that the hope for the world is possible. It arrives over and over again in human form. Please rise in body or spirit as you are willing and join in singing our opening hymn, number 239, Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Tell it on. We summon ourselves here from the demands and the delights of our daily round, from the dirty dishes and the unwaxed floors, from the cold and the ice and the snow shoveling and the snow blowing, from all the incompleteness and the not yet startedness, from the holy and the unholy and the unresolved, we summon ourselves to attend to our vision of peace and justice, of cleanliness and health, of delight and devotion, of the lovely and the sacred, of who we are and what we can do. We summon the power of tradition and the exhilaration of newness, the wisdom of the ages and the knowing of the very young. We summon beauty, eloquence, poetry, and music to be the bearers of our dreams in this coming year. We would open our eyes and our ears and our minds to the amplest dimensions of life. We rejoice in the manifold promises and all the possibilities. Welcome, and I am so glad you are here to celebrate and worship with us today. Please take just a moment to say hi or to introduce yourself to the people around you.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Lois Romikas, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. Ah, New Year's Eve. Today is actually a first for me. It's the first time as an adult I've been in church on New Year's Eve. And so it just goes to show you're never too old to start anew. So instead of staying at home and being snuggle and just, you know, taking my own New Year's time of reflection, I have chosen to start over in community today. And that means a lot to me. So let's join together individually, collectively, in our moments of reflection today, and in the light of hope and that love that moves us forward to start over in this new year. Whether you're with us for the day or here for the lifetime, we are glad you have chosen to join us for worship, community, and celebration.
Comes round again. Oh.
One of the ways we help people in our community to start over is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have any food items to share, will you please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you? And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story. That's a nice airplane. All right. Well, today's story by Dan Satat is called After the Fall, How Humpty Dumpty Got Back Up Again. My name is Humpty Dumpty. This was my favorite spot right up here on the wall there. I know it's an odd place for an egg to be, but I loved being close to the birds. Then one day, and I'm sort of famous for this, folks call it the Great Fall, which sounds really grand. It was just an accident, but it changed my life. What did Humpty Dumpty do? Fall. Yeah, but fortunately, all the king's men managed to put me back together again. Well, most of me. There were some parts that couldn't be healed with bandages and tape. After that day, I became afraid of heights. I think that's pretty understandable. understandable. I was so scared that it kept me from enjoying some of my favorite things, like getting to the top to get the free toy. Yeah, see? There's a free right up there. Yeah. I walked past the wall every day, and I would think about climbing that ladder again. I really missed the birds and being high above the city, but I could never do it because I knew that accidents can happen. I eventually settled for watching the birds from the ground. It wasn't the same, but it was better than nothing. Then one day, an idea flew by, and you have that idea. What is it? It's a paper airplane, right? Did you make that paper airplane? Yeah. Well, it's a nice paper airplane. Making planes was harder than I thought. It was easy to get cuts and scratches, but day after day, I kept trying and trying until I got it right. Look at that beautiful paper airplane. Beautiful bird he made. My plane was perfect and flew like nothing could stop it. I hadn't felt that happy in a long time. It wasn't the same as being up in the sky with the birds, but it was good enough. Unfortunately, accidents can happen. Uh-oh. They always do. Where is the plane headed? Uh-oh, it's headed for the wall. I almost walked away again, but then I thought about all the time I spent working on that plane and all the things I've missed. But the higher I got, he started climbing the wall again, the more nervous I felt. I didn't want to admit it. I was terrified. I didn't look up. I didn't look down. I just kept climbing, one step at a time, until I was no longer afraid. There he is up on top of the wall. Yay! Maybe now you won't think of me as an egg who is famous for falling. Look, he's cracking. Hopefully, you'll remember me. Well, we're going to see. Maybe you'll remember me for the egg who got back up. It looks like he's becoming a bird. Oh, my. And learned how to fly. He hatched. So thank you so much for listening to me today, and you please go back to your seats and enjoy the rest of the service.
I know that everyone's financial contributions to this congregation come from sacrifice and hard work. As a church, we are so grateful, and we commit together to ensure that funds we gather collectively do greater good for ourselves and our church and our world than we could have done alone. May there be an offering to sustain and grow the life and mission of this congregation. May we give in love and hope. May we participate in our giving ritual, a piece that centers generosity as a core value of this community. You don't have to give a large amount on Sunday, though some people choose to. What matters is participating as a part of the community. Even if you only give a penny, it's enough. Reach into your pocket or your bag or your backpack, grab a penny or a quarter. You're more than welcome to grab that $100 bill you got in the back, but I don't expect it. Remember that you are the church, and that as you give, you also receive. The morning offering will now be given and most gratefully received. Thank you so much for everything that you do for the life and the work of this community. Each and every one of you matters. We are a community and a sacred home and a place where people come to hold one another in the moments of our lives that are the most fragile and the most beautiful and the most terrible. We're a community of human hands and human hearts. And this is the time in our service where we minister to one another. We speak briefly about the good and the bad happening to us and to the world. Before the service, you are always welcome to come up and silently light a candle on the candle table. But during the service, we share together. We speak aloud, and our worship associate lights candles for us. So if you would like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a sorrow, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Hi, this is Paula. Please light a candle for a good friend and former colleague who's having surgery this week at Northwestern University for a very aggressive cancer that he's dealing with.
This is Jerry. Please light a candle of warmth. On Friday morning, I got a call for my administrator, Brittany, saying it was cold in the building. I came out here, it was about 52 in here. So fortunately, I was able to get Jeff, our service tech, to come out. We did a bunch of troubleshooting in there, and I think we've got it traced to an archaic pneumatically controlled valve in there, whose purpose has me totally baffled. But he manipulated, and the system seems to be working again. I have two messages. First, if you come in here and it's cold, please either call me or Jim Hansen to avoid a real emergency. The second message is, if you haven't made a pledge to the capital fund drive, one of the major items is the heating system. And we had a close call, folks. It needs your attention.
I'd like to have two people pray for this morning. If you could light a candle in honor of a little 11-year-old boy, Giovanni. He's in the hospital right now with appendicitis. And as I was having tea in your room, I got a text from my sister-in-law, and my niece also is in the hospital, emergency appendicitis.
Wow.
If you could pray for them, I'd really appreciate it.
Hi, this is Barb. A giant candle of joy to be part of this fellowship. And all the people here, you show your love every time I see you. I know that this spreads into the world, but just holding it close today, so glad to be here.
This is Mary, and I'd like to light a candle of sorrow and, I guess, respect and honor for a dear colleague, Jackie DeWilt, who founded the People Program at UW-Madison, which is a pre-college program that starts in 7th and 8th grade and is targeted at underrepresented students in Milwaukee mostly, but also in Madison. And the People Program is responsible for thousands of students being able to attend UW-Madison that wouldn't have otherwise been able to attend, and Jackie was one of the founders and passed away pretty unexpectedly a couple of weeks ago, so just want to honor her.
This is Carol. Please light a candle of joy for Amy. It's been a great go with you as our minister these years. Your sabbatical, well-earned and well-deserved, but we also will miss you while you're gone.
Thank you.
This is Diane. A candle of thankfulness for my physical therapist, my acupuncturist, and cortisone.
This is Kristen. If you could light a candle of joy for Greg, who in the front row there accepted a new job that will be starting this month and all the emotions that come with that and leaving his previous position after 22 years.
Good morning, this is Barbara. I'd like you to light a candle of joy for my oldest granddaughter, who graduated from college over 2 years ago as a nutritionist, and when she was working at a health club, finally averaged out her salary, and it was $5 an hour. So she ended up needing some money and took a course in computers in Milwaukee for only 5 months. She's just been hired by Northwest Mutual, all kinds of wonderful benefits, and a decent salary.
Hi, this is Christy. Over the last 18 months, I went through a number of considerable health challenges that I've been very open with this community and my other family and friends. All the while, my marriage has been falling apart, and I've been too embarrassed to openly say that to anyone. And it occurs to me that, you know, the struggle that we have in our close personal relationships is a very real, raw thing, and I need your prayers. My family needs your prayers, and I just need to be open about that. So thank you.
Love you, kid. I'd ask you to light a candle of both gladness and sorrow for my friend Kadeen Marie, who died this week. She was the nurse who took care of my late partner, Bonnie. She was funny and witty and way too young. And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
It Matters by Robert R. Welch. I knew a man who printed on his stationery this proverb: nothing is settled, everything matters. It established a certain ambiance for reading his letters, as if to say, what you're about to read is to be taken seriously, but is not final. I remember him and his proverb sometimes, especially when it seems to change. Impossible to change the world or myself in any significant way. Times like the beginnings of New Year's. Sorry, Jim, I say. It's not true that nothing is settled. In the past year, choices have been made. Losses have been suffered. There has been growth and decay. There have been commitments and betrayals. None of that can be undone. A year ago, no one knew whether this year one person would become pregnant, another would get cancer, another would take a new job, and another would have an accident. But now it is settled. One day this year, I was present just when someone needed me. And on another day, I was busy doing something else when I was needed. One day, I said something to a friend that injured our relationship. Another day, I said something that enabled a person to see life in a new way. The best and worst of those days is now written. All of my tears of sorrow, of joy, cannot erase it. If I stay with this meditation long enough, the reply comes. Robbie, says Jim, you have misunderstood the proverb. It is true that you cannot escape the consequences of your actions or the chances of the world, but what is not settled is how the story turns out. What is not settled is what is the meaning of your life will be. The meaning of life is not contained within one act, one day, or one year. As long as you are alive, the story of your life is being told, and the meaning is still open. As long as there is life in this world, the story of the world is being told. What is done, but nothing is settled. And if nothing is settled, then everything matters. Every choice, every act in the new year matters. Every word, every deed is making the meaning of your life and telling the story of the world. Everything matters in the year coming. And more importantly, everything matters today. Here ends the first reading. If everything really matters, then it's important to bless every moment of our lives. Today we share in blessings for losers, risk takers, all failures far and wide. Blessed are those who fall in the mud, who jump with gusto and rip their pants, who skin elbows and bruise the ego, for they shall know the sweetness of risk. Blessed are those who make giant mistakes, whose intentions are good, but the impact has injured, who know the hot sense of regret and ask for mercy. For their hearts will know the gift of forgiveness. Blessed are they who have seen a D or an F or a C or any letter less than perfect, who are painfully familiar with the red pen and the labels as less than, for they know the wisdom in the imperfect. Blessed are they who try again, who dust off, who wash up, who extend the wish for peace, who return to the sites of failure, who are dogged in their pursuit, for they will discover the secret to dreams. Blessed are those who refuse to listen to the naysayers, for their hearts will be houses for hope. Blessed are they who see beyond the surface of another, for they will be able to delight in the gift of compassion. And blessed are they who stop running the race to help a fellow traveler, who pick up the fallen, who stop for injured life, for they shall know the kindness of strangers. Blessed are those who boldly abandon winning, for they shall know the path of justice. Amen. Please join me in a moment of silent meditation, thought, or prayer.
I was talking with God the other day, because we're cool like that. And God said, "Hey, I want you to tell people something." And I was kind of busy, so I pretended like I didn't hear. And God poked me and said, "I'm not kidding. Pay attention." Because, you know, while we're cool, we're not that cool. And I know when I have pushed it way too far. So I put down my coffee cup and I turned around to listen. And God said, "Let me hang a word around your neck, so that everyone can see it. And you better speak it when you're out, because I'll know if you don't. And it will get heavy, so heavy on your soul. And a word was hung around my neck to take out to people standing in the street. A word was preached into my ear and laid into my mouth and burned into my heart until all I could see was the shape of the word, and the word was all, and the word was love." And God said, "Now get out, because you don't have all day, and that word is going to get heavier. And you've got some work yet to do. So I'm taking my word out into the world, because love came down on this green earth. Love came down and turned over the tables and set the world on its end. Love made it clear that it was the word for the poor and the brokenhearted, for the queer boy and the angry girl. Love was the word for late night hookers and long haul truckers, for the heroin junkie and runaway cutters. Love was the word for all of the screwed up and the pushed over and the too tired, and I can't take no more. Love was the word for the HIV patient and the man with no papers. Love was the word. Love was the word for you and for me and for all the saints and all the sinners and all of the scramblers in between. Love came down and made a way for there to be a way. And then love said, we are never going back. He who has ears, let him hear. Love said, we are all a part of something bigger. And if you cannot rise with us, if you cannot love with us, then you should get the hell out of the way, because we aren't going anywhere and you are in the path. He who has ears, let him hear. Love came down for the world to know, and I'm holding out this word so that even when you and God are just like that, you can't pretend you didn't know. I cannot put it down. Not for a politician spewing hatred. Not for a minister vomiting out bile in the costume of a saint. Not for money or for country or for kin. I'm holding that word, my word, in my mouth. Because the next time I see my God, I want to be able to say, you gave me a word and I carried it just the way you asked. You gave it to me, I took it, I showed it to everyone I met. You gave it to me and I showed it to her and Ger and Z and him and they. I showed it to them and to those over there. I never put it down. I can never put it down. I was talking with God the other day, because we're cool like that. And God said, hey, I want you to tell people something. And I was still kind of busy. So I pretended like I didn't hear. And God said, I'm not kidding. Pay attention. Because, you know, we're cool, but we're not cool like that. And I know when I have pushed it way too far. So I put down my coffee cup and I turned around. And then God gave me a word. And now I've given it to you. So start moving. Here ends the second reading. Life and love are gifts given to us. Gifts that we can open over and over again. Each day is a new beginning. Each moment a chance to love one more time. Please rise in body or spirit as you are willing and join in singing number 16. 'Tis a gift. I think we're going to do it through twice. I'm sure out of all of you in this room, some of you may have seen the musical Rent. 525,600 minutes. 525,000 moments so dear. 525,600 minutes. How do you measure a year? In daylights, in sunsets, in midnights, in cups of coffee, in inches, in miles, in laughter, in strife. 525,600 minutes. How do you measure a year and a life? Rent's Seasons of Love asks a good question, and it's one I'm asking today. How do you measure a year in your life? Every year is different. At the end of some years, it's very easy to say, oh, it was a good year. Other years you go, oh, gosh, come on, Midnight. This was a lousy year. I don't want any more years like this one. But how do you measure that? How many good things have to happen for it to be a good year? How many bad things to be a bad? One huge, terrible, bad thing? Does that ruin the whole year? Is it like poison, a few drops, taint the whole thing? The question is, what did you actually experience this year? And I'm not talking about what happened. Lots of things happened. It's not the same at all. I'm talking about what you experienced. I'm not talking about all the moments that you rushed through and wrote off while you were in a hurry to get to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing so that you wouldn't miss out on anything. What did you actually experience? What mattered? How did you mark the year's passage, these 525,600 minutes of your life? A writer named Stephen Dobbins wrote a poem that I absolutely love because it's something that I fight against all the time. The poem is called Pursuit, and it goes like this. Each thing I do, I rush through so that I can do something else. In such a way do the days pass, a blend of stock car racing and the never-ending building of a Gothic cathedral. Through the windows of my speeding car, I see all that I love falling away. Books unread, jokes untold, landscapes unvisited. And why? What treasure do I expect in my future? Rather, it is the confusion of childhood loping behind me, the chaos of the mind, the failure chipping away at each success. Glancing over my shoulder, I see its shape and so move forward, as someone in the woods at night might hear the sound of approaching feet and stop to listen, then instead of silence, hear some creature trying to be silent. What else can he do but run, rushing blindly down the path, stumbling, struck in the face by sticks, the other ever closer, yet not really hurrying or out of breath, just teasing its kill. When we sit down to watch television or a movie, maybe we have our popcorn and our drink, maybe our bowl of fruit and our plate of hummus. But we've sat down and we see a story of moving images, fooling our eyes and our minds into thinking it's all one piece, but it isn't.
If we take that movie and we stop looking at the image that's being projected, but look at the thing itself, the movie, the film, we see that it is made up of stills or frames, one unmoving picture after the next, frozen in time. It's easy to make life imitate art. Each thing I do, I rush through so that I can do something else. Those words ever feel true for you? When you get behind the wheel of your car in the movie of your life, has it become so automatic that sometimes you look up and you're halfway home? Don't even know how you got there? Didn't even see any of it? You go to work and you do your job, and all of a sudden it's almost quitting time. You've done lots of things. It's hard when you have 5 minutes to take a shower before your husband needs to be somewhere or your wife needs to be somewhere else. One child needs to be at a soccer practice. Two need to be at a party. One's just confused. And you take that shower and you get out and you rush off to do the next thing. And 3 minutes later, you can't even remember what the water felt like on your back. You can't even remember what that delicious soap that you picked out specifically because it smelled so good in the store. You didn't even take the time to smell it. You slapped on some aftershave. You don't know which bottle you grabbed. It didn't matter. You just grabbed whatever was closest. What mattered was getting out the door to do the next thing. Right now, in this minute, this frame, are you already waiting for the next word? Thinking through what I'm going to say at the end? Is your mind already ahead to this afternoon, to a laundry list of what you have to do yet? To coffee hour or lunch or dinner or New Year's Eve? Are you thinking about bedtime when you can just lay down so you can get up and do it all again tomorrow? You have just survived 525,600 minutes successfully. What happened in that time? What did you experience? At midnight tonight, we begin a new calendar year. The period between the years, that last few hours of one and the first hour or two of the next, is something that could be referred to as a liminal time. It's a time of transition from one thing to the next with no real context outside of that transition. It's all about looking back and looking forward. Liminal times can feel a little strange. You may be more familiar with liminal spaces. Bus stations, doorways, places that lead you to the next thing. But midnight is a liminal time, and it's time to start over, a time for fresh beginnings. Our second reading today was about having the courage to begin again in love, in a world where I know that loving the world and your neighbor and yourself often seems very, very hard to do. We can choose each new moment of chaotic life to begin again in love. But what better time than the liminal moment, the odd, strange, waiting to be born moment at the start of the next 525,600 minutes of your life? We can mindfully set an intention and start over today or tomorrow or the next day. So why not tonight at midnight? Anne Shirley from the book Anne of Green Gables by Lucy Maud Montgomery isn't as popular as she used to be. She's been pushed aside by video games. But generations of readers came to know and love Anne as that skinny orphan with the freckles and the red hair, possibly slightly overdramatic, unlike anyone I know personally.
She didn't fit in anywhere she went. She was always a little too loud, a little too tasteless, too clumsy, maybe just too outspoken for the places where she was. And still, readers loved her. And I read all of those Anne of Green Gables books as a child. And one of her phrases still sticks in my mind like a fish hook. She used to say, "Tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it yet." And still, she lunged forward, grabbing for each new day. Tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it yet. Tomorrow is a fresh start. Tomorrow at 12:01 a.m., you will begin to experience the next year of your life. And it is up to you how you will experience it, or if you will experience it at all. An article in The Economist says, "Why is everyone so busy?" The problem is less how much time people have than how they see it. Ever since a clock was first used to synchronize labor in the 18th century, time has been understood in relation to money. Once hours are financially qualified, people worry more about wasting, saving, or using them profitably. When economies grow and incomes change, everyone's time becomes more valuable. And the more valuable something becomes, the scarcer it seems. You have one life. This is not a dress rehearsal. You may have heard that somewhere. There isn't a cast and crew waiting to give you an award for your suffering, your misery, your joy, your pain, all the good, all the bad. There's just you. And that's enough. You have one life, and it is indeed valuable. When you spend the minutes of it this year, don't let it become merely currency spent to buy you the minutes that come after it. Your life is worth more than that. This year, I challenge you to experience your life. Experience every minute. I'm giving you a word, and that word is love. This year, love your life. Love your neighbor. Love yourself. This year, spend your precious 525,600 minutes being present as often as possible. Spend it doing what you love as often as you can. Spend it starting over as many times as you need to, rather than being pulled down by your mistakes. Spend it learning from those mistakes and not making them again. When you do make them anyway, again and again, spend it forgiving yourself and starting over yet again. Spend your minutes creating. Spend your minutes honoring the good and learning from the bad. Spend them letting go of what chains you and holds you back. Spend them living rather than hoping that you get a chance to live. Spend them defining yourself. And here's the important part that goes with that. Surround yourself with people who are doing the same thing. Because life is too short to spend. Life is too short to waste on all the I should've and I could've and I wish I had. Life is an ongoing triage situation, and you are both the doctor and the patient. Make the choices that let you really live. 525,600 25,600 minutes. How will you measure a year in your life? Amen.
When we take fire from our chalice, it does not become less, it becomes more. And so we extinguish our chalice, but we take its light and warmth with us, multiplying their power by all of our lives and sharing it with the world. Please rise in body or spirit as you are willing and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 1017 in the Teal Hymnal. Building a New Way. Set our intentions, named our curiosity, and committed our energies, and then given ourselves to lives of balance, purpose, and meaning, let us begin again in love. Peace, and may it be so.